From WAMU 88.5 at American University in Washington, welcome to the Politics Hour starring Tom Sherwood. I'm Kojo Nandi. Tom Sherwood, he's our resident analyst. He's an NBC4 reporter and a columnist with the Current Newspapers. Tom, welcome.
Hey, good afternoon.
Also with us in studio today is Mary Chase. She is a D.C. council member. She's a Democrat representing Ward 3. She is our only guest today. Mary Chase, thank you for joining us in studio.
I'm delighted you invited me. Thank you.
If you have comments or questions for Mary Che, you can call us at 800-433-8850. Send email to kojo@wamu.org. You can watch our live video stream at kojoshow.org and ask a question or make a comment there. You can shoot us a tweet at kojoshow. Tom Sherwood, let's start in Virginia, where presidential candidate Hillary Clinton is holding a rally, maybe even as we speak, in Alexandria.
Yeah, she's at the Market Square there, King Street, and a couple, Cameron Street, a couple other places, North Royal, I think. Some of them are blocked off, so if you're in your car listening to this show, don't drive in that area. But they were due to have a big Democrats rally for Hillary Clinton.
You mean right Terry out. McAuliffe is not supporting Bernie Sanders?
No. No. No Bernie for Terry.
He's a family friend.
But then, you know, and she's supposed to speak about 12:30, and this is a nice, after the 11 hours before the Benghazi committee yesterday and last night.
It was only 11, it seemed like 24.
I watched as much of it as I could. I thought it was interesting. I agree with a lot of the analysis, even in some of the conservative analysis, that the Republican on the committee didn't seem to be as organized and as focused as they needed to be. She sat there fairly calmly in control of herself for 11 hours, and some of the Republican candidates, I mean the candidates, members, kind of got off track yelling and getting frustrated.
So,
Virginia, this is Virginia is a purple state for presidential politics. It has huge elections on November the 3rd, just in a couple of weeks now, for the Virginia Senate, which is almost evenly divided. There are about three or four races in the state, one down in Roanoke, one in Richmond, one or two up in this area, that could change the nature of what Terry McAuliffe will do for the final 2 years of his term in office. So it's a big, big political day in Virginia.
The elections are next month. All members of the General Assembly are up for election or re-election.
All of them, though, are assured of winning.
The difference will be made in the Virginia State Senate, which is where McAuliffe hopes that the Democrats can pick up a seat. If they do, in fact, they would be equal with the Republicans, but they get to cast the deciding vote, and so they'd be essentially in the majority.
Yeah, it would be great if they got for the Democrats if they got two more seats, because the presiding lieutenant governor, Ralph Northam, can cast a vote for Ty Matters, except he cannot vote on the budget. So it's very important for the Democrats to win. But Ed Gillespie, who will probably run for governor and next time around for the Republicans, says this is the most vital thing for the Republicans in Virginia, is to hold the Senate.
Mary Chair, you didn't watch the session, the hearing yesterday. What's your excuse?
Well, actually, I was working, and on top of that, you know, I was soured by what the objective of the Republicans was, which is to try to smear Hillary Clinton, and I really wanted to have none of that.
I mentioned to you that Mary Che is an elected Democrat, did I not?
You should mention that.
Yes, I
am a Democrat.
A big D Democrat.
And I support Hillary Clinton all the way.
What's happening to the Democratic contender for the presidency from Maryland? Former Governor Martin O'Malley is getting very lonely in that position because a number of other potential Democratic presidential candidates have dropped out, and Vice President Joe Biden says he's not dropping in. Jim Webb has dropped out. Linkum Chafee has dropped out, which leaves Bernie Sanders and Martin O'Malley, and both Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders are raising a lot of money. Clinton raised $29.5 million in the previous quarter, Sanders $26 million. O'Malley could only raise $1.3 million, and now there's an event being held in Maryland at the home of the state Senate President Mike Miller and a lot of Maryland officials are going to be there. He seems to be losing traction and not gaining traction even in Maryland.
Well, I have a lot of respect for former Virginia Senator Jim Webb for his war record and his focus on serious issues in the country. But his campaign never took off. It's partly because of his somewhat quirky personality.
Doesn't much like campaigning. Doesn't much like asking for money.
Well, maybe he has too high of an opinion of Americans to pay attention to the serious stuff instead of the stuff that we often hear in campaigns. And so he's out, and he said, mount a third-party campaign, but hope he would very seriously look at that before he does. Lincoln Chafee, he announced he was going to run for president. I think he raised him like $30,000. I don't think he ever ran, and now he's dropped out for not running. And then Martin O'Malley, very popular governor, very popular Democrat. There's been no window of opportunity that has opened for him, and he's gamely trying. Some people say, he wants to be Hillary Clinton's vice president. Well, that was true in 2008 when she was running. He was on the short list of being the president, vice presidential possibility for her, but that window certainly is closed. She is not going to pick him to be the vice presidential candidate. If she were smart, she'd pick Joe Biden.
Except that I'm not sure that he can serve more than two terms as vice president.
No, Virginia wouldn't be surprised. She said today in her remarks to some kind of women's Democratic forum Hillary Clinton did before she was going to Alexandria, that she thought Joe Biden would remain active beyond this term as vice president. And I immediately thought, he could be her secretary of state. He would love that job.
Well, there seem to be very few jobs that Joe Biden doesn't love. That's just who Joe Biden is. Now, on to Mary Che. In case you didn't realize, she is our guest this hour. You have questions or comments for her, give us a call at 800-433-8850. She's the council member representing Ward 3 in the District of Columbia. Earlier this week, a majority of this council signed on to legislation that you and fellow council member David Grosso introduced that would close a loophole in city election law. This is a direct response to a political action committee supporting Mayor Muriel Bowser. WMU 885's Patrick Madden first reported on that committee. It's called the Fresh Pack Committee, and it seems to have raised over $300,000 thus far because it's an off year, and so there are no limits on the contributions. The average contribution they're getting here is $6,000. What's wrong with that?
Well, it's deeply disturbing to me in terms of what this pack is doing. It is unlimited amounts. The monies are coming from people who want to do business with the government or who have been given appointments to boards and commissions. Almost like, direct pay to play kind of thing. And not only are the amounts unlimited, but the committee itself, really, without any sense of shame, says that it's going to use this tainted treasure to influence the votes of members of the council by using it to support people who support the mayor and using it against people who don't support the mayor. And the combination of all of that, I mean, the idea of this political machine awash in money, attempting to control the council, I find it completely unacceptable.
But it is within the law.
Yes, there are things that you might get away with, but that you shouldn't do. And this is one of them.
When we first heard about this, there was some suggestion that this was a new provision of the law that had been inserted into the ethics reform bill that Muriel Bowser passed and that the council approved, suggested and the council passed. But in fact, this has been on the books for some time. And there are any number of political action committees that raise money, and we don't really look at them that closely. But this is the first time a sitting mayor has not only embraced the PAC, she's raised money for it. She's going to attend some fundraisers between now and the end of the year for that $1 million they hope to raise. And she told me this week when I asked about it, she said her record is she's never opposed a sitting council member. She's always supported people for open seats, and that she suggested the money would not be used against incumbents like yourself and others. But that doesn't mean that the PAC couldn't still fund issue advertising and all kinds of things against you.
No, that doesn't give me.
Why did the mayor do it? I mean,
I don't know.
This is her first term in office. She had the aura of a reformer and a fresh start, the era of the Vince Gray, and now she's gotten into the tub of money that just doesn't feel right for so many people.
It doesn't feel right. It doesn't look right. I'm going to have to say that it's people around her that have come up with this scheme to exploit the law that would allow them to do this. And as I said, I think they have they must have no sense of what this looks like to the public.
I just find that hard to believe they didn't consider this. Colby King, the longtime columnist for the Washington Post, wrote a column in the middle of the week as opposed to on Saturday, saying, who will save Mayor Bowser from her friends?
Well, you know, and you also
said, suggesting at the end of the column that at the end of all of this, somebody might be going to jail. But go ahead.
But you know, you said, oh, she indicated that she's not going to use it against sitting council members. You know, that gives you no comfort, because the fact of the matter is, if injecting this money to elect people that she wants on the council, but also I can tell you just from hallway conversations, it's already had some effect in the council, because council members are now worried, if they are up for re-election, that the money may be used against them. And so maybe she's even accomplished, you know, garnering the support that she wants already just by the threat of possibly using this in council races.
What will the legislation that you proposed do to close this loophole?
Well, it doesn't close it entirely. It simply says that instead of the law being as it is now, where you can raise an unlimited amount of money during a non-election year, now the limits for election year contributions will come into play.
PAC contributions of
$5,000. You know, you have people who have given $20,000 who've gotten an appointment to a board or commission. You have people who are giving more than $5,000 who want to do business with the government. You know, I take it that your listeners, if they're hearing this, they must be shaking their heads.
I won't say that.
One listener shaking his head. Let's listen to Melvin in Northeast Washington. Melvin, you are on the air. Go ahead, please.
Well, I'm beyond shaking my head, because this smells of Jeffrey Thompson, the shadow campaign, all over again. And let me just correct something. If the mayor can go on and say that the money will not be used against any sitting person, that tells me that the PAC is not independent to begin with.
I'm not sure I understand what you mean.
Well, what he means is an independent political action committee is supposed to take actions without consultation with a political person.
And if the mayor is in a position to say that, that means she's.
But in an off year,
it implies she's consulting with the PAC.
Oh yeah, but in this off year, the mayor is able to raise money for this PAC, and they just can't consult her on what they do with the money, and they can't officially consult her.
I should mention that Patrick Madden, who broke the story, will be joining us on Monday to discuss it farther. But care to respond to Melvin?
No, I think that I do want to correct one thing. The mayor's people have come back and said, well, this is all above board. We've declared who's getting this money, how much money they're giving, so it's transparent in that sense. So it's not a secret amount of money, but it's a bad system that they've set up to take money, to solicit money from people who want to do business with the government or who want an appointment, and to collect these amounts.
And on this very important point, as a reporter, I'm watching and I see that it's legal. But here's a problem I ran into this week. I know you oppose the Pepco-Exelon merger.
We're getting to that next.
Okay, but I had been told by someone who's very active in politics, who said you ought to ask Fresh PAC, this mayor's PAC, ask Pepco and Exelon each for $20,000. And so I did my due diligence. I sent notes to Pepco, emailed back and forth. They told me that they give to a lot of organizations, blah, 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 but they have not given any money to the Fresh PAC. I said, I didn't ask you if you gave money. I asked if you were asked for money by the Fresh PAC during these merger negotiations in the mayor's office. They refused to answer. Pepco refused to answer. I haven't heard back from Exelon.
They did not say no.
They didn't say no. They just said they haven't given money. They didn't say they weren't asked. And so I said to the mayor's Fresh PAC, I said, all right, guys, did you ask Pepco and Exelon for money while you were she was negotiating this new deal for the merger? They will not answer.
They did not say no.
Fresh PAC will not answer. I think that gives a kind of shady, casting a shadow on city politics already before the PAC even spends a dime somewhere.
The Pepco-Exelon merger, D.C. regulators rejected the deal initially, but that decision is being appealed. And earlier this month, Mayor Muriel Bowser reached a settlement deal with Exelon that she hopes will make the Public Service Commission reconsider. Some unexpected voices have emerged in this discussion, including local groups like churches, nonprofits, who, I should point out, are beneficiaries of Pepco's charitable giving, and a new wrinkle. now a proposal from a public power utility to acquire Pepco. What's going on?
Well, I do want to talk about this takeover because all we have are some public voices trying to respond to the extraordinary juggernaut of millions of dollars being spent by Exelon in ads and lobbying and, you know, every possible effort to encourage people to think that this is a good thing when, in fact, it's not a good thing. The public shouldn't be hoodwinked by this settlement. They've upped a few things, like the amount that actually goes to a ratepayer will increase by $26. But most of the promises that they're making are short-term, paltry, and in any event, things that we were on the path to do. And the inherent conflict between what we do in the District of Columbia and what we want to be is still there. And so at the end of the day, taking, by the way, a long-term view, all of the things that Exelon is supposedly promising us will go away in 2 to 4 or 6 years, you know, a short time frame. And then I guarantee you, rates will rise, just as they have in Baltimore where Exelon has taken over there. Rates will rise, jobs will be lost, the lobbying that Exelon does against renewables and progressive energy policies will continue.
So that we don't only talk about what you are against. Are you for this DC public power proposal?
Well, let me talk about that just a little bit. I put some money in the budget so that we could study it because, you know, there may be significant issues that might arise to see whether this could work.
You proposed a $200,000
study
of where the city could control its own energy.
Right. It would be like the DC water utility. We'd have an electric utility. But let's look at that as an alternative. What happened to that proposal for a study? Well, it was approved unanimously out of my committee. It was approved unanimously in the budget. Budget has to be voted on twice, the Budget Support Act. And then what happened was because they thought it might confuse things or pose an alternative, Pepco representatives went slithering around the district building in, you know, almost like in the dead of night on the eve of the second vote and basically,
stripped it
and allocated it to something else because that's the kind of power that Pepco has in our government. We are shot through with their influence. And that's what they were able to do. And by the way, as I said, it was just to study the proposal. So I think it could be something, but I wanted to see more about what it might be.
Let me step back for a second, because the Fresh Pack proposal, the proposal that you introduced that would affect Fresh Pack's operations has support of a majority of the council, but it doesn't seem to have a veto-proof majority. And one can predict that the mayor will likely veto it.
I don't know that that's the case, but it does have it does have the consequence of it being in the regular legislative process, which means that it probably wouldn't really come to fruition before the end of the year. And that's when the window closes on the unlimited contributions. So the mayor might be quite content to, you know, play it out.
And in the complex world of legislation, one council member once told me, just because I signed on to the bill doesn't mean I support it. Because the to an ordinary person, that's kind of funny. But the fact is, sometimes someone signs on to a bill so that he or she can then manipulate changes in that bill as it moves through the legislative process. So there are 7 people for this closing of this loophole in the city's law. But it doesn't mean that 7 people will, in fact, vote for it.
On to the telephones again. Here now is Tech in Washington, D.C. Tech, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Councilwoman, how are you? I'm a taxi driver.
Hi, taxi driver.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good.
There are certain things that I agree with you, and there are certain things I don't agree with you. I'm sure you expect that from us. But my question is, we've been to your office. We've been talking to your staff. Your staff members about illegal tags that were obtained by some taxi cab companies. Some companies had like 20 cars to rent. Now they have 200, 250. And then how they got it, it has to be investigated. But we have come to your office, but nothing has been done. And what are your plan about these things, about getting these things fixed up because...
Okay, let me have the council member respond. Mary Chan?
Well, first of all, let me say with respect to the taxi drivers, despite the fact that I created the legislation that would allow other carriers to come into the district, I have always said, and I think shown by my actions, that I also want a vibrant, robust, successful taxi industry. And we have attempted to make changes in order to make that happen, to make it happen more in the District of Columbia. In terms of the issues that you raise, this has to be a joint effort between the council in terms of oversight, but more the Taxi Cab Commission. And if there are illegalities, perhaps even the Attorney General. So it's not as if we're indifferent to this. It's just a matter of seeing, you know, how we can pursue it.
I always thought the cab drivers should start a political action committee.
Yeah, they could get unlimited money.
I actually went by the campaign. If I can go back to that just for a moment. I went by the campaign finance office Wednesday or Thursday, Wednesday, and picked up the papers that for me to create a PAC. I picked up all the papers in the slush fund PAC. I'm going to limit contributions, though, to $1.
No, and you should call it the slush fund PAC.
That is what it's called. Yes, I haven't written out. And then we're going to take all the money, and then we're going to have parties for journalists.
And with that, we have to take a short break from this broadcast. When we return, we will return to the conversation with Councilmember Mary Che. If you have questions or comments for her, give us a call at 800-433-8850. You can send email to kojo@wamu.org. Shoot us a tweet at Kojo Show or go to our website, kojoshow.org. Watch the live video stream and join the conversation there. Tom Sherwood is our resident analyst. He's an NBC4 reporter and a columnist with the current newspapers. I'm Kojo Nandi.
Hi, it's Diane. The next meeting of my book club is on Wednesday, May 31st at 1 p.m. Eastern. I'll host a discussion of Mad Honey by Jodi Picoult and Jennifer Finney Boylan, followed by a conversation with the authors. Find out more and register at dianereem.org/bookclub.
Welcome back to our conversation on the Politics Hour with D.C. Councilmember Mary Che. She's a Democrat who represents Ward 3. Tom Sherwood is our resident analyst. He's an NBC4 reporter and a columnist with the current newspapers. We're taking your calls at 800-433-8850. You can send email to kojo@wamu.org. Councilmember Che, the mayor's proposed crime bill is getting pushback, including protests for provisions that would allow officers to perform warrantless searches in the case of returning citizens convicted of violent crimes. What's your view about this?
Well, there are a number of bills. I have one bill that, since I have the opportunity, I'm going to tout it. It is a bill that's unrelated to the crime spike. It's to reform eyewitness identification procedures to make them more reliable. It's to provide for open discovery in criminal cases. It's to provide further information to the Office of Citizens Complaints so we can track, complaints against officers. And it also has a reform of the assault on a police officer provision in the law, which even Chief Lanier supports a reform of. Currently, the law allows someone to be charged with an assault on a police officer, even though it doesn't involve an assault at all. It might be something as minor or modest as stepping forward toward a police officer or bracing your arms as the police officer wants to put on cuffs, or even stepping in the way without touching anybody of a police officer engaging in activities. And having that on your record, and there have been, you know, many convictions, and there's an overlay of race and, concern by people that maybe it's applied too frequently in certain communities. This bill would also reform that and make an assault on a police officer really an assault, and resisting arrest or other items as other kind of a charge. The mayor has taken that piece of my bill, changed it in ways that I'm not convinced is better, but nevertheless put that in her bill and has put some other, leavening provisions that are meant to sort of counteract the kind of what some are saying are harsh ideas about, getting after people who may commit crimes. Now, about the question, I will get to your question.
I was wondering.
Yes. when you have a spike in crime or, the spike in homicides as we had, people...
40% increase
yeah, people,
in
were getting naturally upset. And, of course, it's the expected thing that a government would say, well, we have to do something. And so the mayor put together a package, which I think the entire package is actually quite good. But there are some provisions of it that are somewhat worrisome. If you've been convicted of a violent crime, you would have to agree that you could have your home or your person searched at any time without any justification, without any warrant, without anything, including the home where you are living. And so, for example, if nothing else, there's a concern that people who may offer a room in a house or try to help somebody who's getting out of prison, that they too would be subject to this kind of warrantless lack of justification entry to check on the person who had been released from jail. That's just one of the concerns. There are some other concerns as well, but we can get past that. We can find what's good about her proposals. And as I said, there are a number of good things. We can find what's good and yet avoid what may be problematic.
Can we address the warrantless search? Because when this was first proposed, the public reaction against it was that it would allow people, police or authorities, to go into anyone's. I mean, it got misreported.
No, that's not true.
It was misreported that they could go into virtually anyone's home. But in fact, this was targeted towards violent offenders who are a portion of violent offenders who agree to that search as part of their condition of being released from jail.
Right. And who wouldn't agree to it? I mean, maybe
you agree to virtually anything. But don't you also have to agree to, like, drug testing? How is it that we could?
Well, the concern has to do with the fact that others might be drawn into this, and it might actually chill somebody who wants to offer, a room or a place to stay for somebody. You know, maybe they did commit a violent crime, and I'm not, diminishing the significance of that. But on the other hand, if we expect someone to be rehabilitated, would they be a pariah?
Would it be all right if they lived in their own home and not with someone else?
Well,
I thought the opposition was against it, and it's just a subject to an unwarranted search at any time, a surprise search.
Well, there's a range of opposition, and I don't know whether that would be a sufficient cure for people who oppose it entirely, but that at least, reflects the fact that there are parts of this bill that really need to be looked at and perhaps eliminated to save the rest of it.
The deputy mayor, Kevin Donahue, said it would be a very small portion of the people who would be asked to do this because there had been direct information and evidence that they were still involved in some types of gun stuff.
Yeah, but that's not reflected in the bill. So,
okay. So the bill is too loose.
Right, the bill is too loose.
On to Jennifer in Washington, D.C. Jennifer, you are on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi. Yes, I have a question for Councilwoman Shea about the transfer of Walter Reed to D.C. International Charter School. I'm just curious what the status of that is and what the holdup has been. And also the funding that had originally been approved for DCI, about $6 million, which we lost, wondering if there's any movement on getting some more funding for DCI.
Well, our listeners should understand that there's going to be much more than a charter school at the Walter Reed development, but that is the caller's primary concern.
Yes, but I apologize that I don't have the current information in front of me to be able to answer. If you want to check with my office later on in the afternoon, we can try to find the answer for you.
This is one of the issues. The city has a significantly number. I can't talk today. The city has.
You're worried about the tattoo.
I know. No. Where I'm going to put it. Anyway, a significant number of development opportunities, of which Walter Reed is one. It's a lot of acreage. There's a lot of money that's going to be spent, and this is why people are worried about the development community being kept arm's distance from the people who are going to make the decision about what happens there.
Well, I think that's good that you bring it back to that because, there are concerns about who's going to get to play in that game, but also concerns about whether we are too generous in giving away government property.
Tax breaks. Tax breaks.
Exactly right.
D.C.'s proposed Family Leave Act has gotten quite a bit of attention, much of it positive. It would be the most generous in the nation, but the Washington Post editorial page describes it as going way too far, calling it yet another burden on businesses here, and one that does not focus on the most vulnerable, low-wage workers. What about that criticism?
Well, I signed on to the bill, and I did so, and the chief architects of it are Councilmember Silverman and Mr. Grasso. But I signed on with it because I agree with the idea. I think the concept is good, and I think we have to move in that direction. Whether this bill emerges exactly as it's been drafted is a question that we'll take up as it goes through the process. It may very well be that we should take a smaller step. It may very well be that we come up with a different scheme about how we're going to finance it. But I do think that we should commit to providing paid family leave for workers.
This is an example of, I said earlier, that you can sign on to a bill because you like the idea of it, but you don't buy into everything that's in the bill at the start.
On to Mike in Washington, D.C. Mike, your turn.
Yes, thank you, Kojo. My question is for the councilwoman. We moved to Ward 3. We're a very young family, and we moved there primarily for the public education that was offered, and we found it incredibly frustrating. Shortly after we moved, we had the Friendship Park Co-op close, and that's closed kind of indefinitely at this point. We have struggled to get into the pre-K-4 program at Janney, but there is a lottery. There is no guarantee. And we're now facing, in our particular case, I've talked to Anthony at your office, our daughter's just 6 days past the cutoff, so we face another year of lottery. And I just, I wonder if what you're trying to do to address the cost of living in Ward 3 for young families, because there is very little to no guaranteed options for public education, and housing itself is very expensive, and forcing young families like myself into some private options in those early years is a very big strain, and I have concerns that it is limiting our neighborhoods to those that could only really afford it, and I'm curious to hear your response.
Well, you know, I'm familiar with your case. We did try to intervene. They're pretty strict about that cutoff date, and we weren't able to make any headway there. So I'm sorry that we weren't able to be successful on that point. But to the larger point about child care, in fact, I was just speaking to a group of council members yesterday, women. We were getting together, and we were thinking about issues that really should be next up for us to consider.
The Women's Caucus?
Well, you know, actually, I asked that it not be called a caucus, that it be the women's group, just so that we can, you know, get together and talk about certain things. And I found it very significant that all of us thought that that should be issue number one. You know, we in Ward 3 suffer from our success, in a sense, because we have very, very good public schools, and we have many parents who want to send their children to those public schools, and we have overcrowding. And I have worked hard to make sure that whenever we could, that we've been able to expand the spots in our schools for young families, both in terms of the regular education, but also, of course, in terms of pre-K and even prior to that. The fact of the matter is, however, that we need to have more spaces. We need to have more spots for children. And I know there are these waiting lists, and I know how very frustrating it is. My own children, you know, who went to Merch prior to going to Merch, they went to private childcare, daycare. And I know even way back when, which is a long time ago now, they're adults, that it's very expensive and it drains the budget. So,
and it's crazy expensive now.
It's crazy expensive, and we really need to figure out solutions, and we are working on it. That may not give you solace for the very short term, but we're aware of it, and we're trying to figure out solutions.
Tom Sherwood, 2 minutes.
Very quickly, you've authored the Right to Die bill. What is the call? What are you calling it? What, for people to know, what is the bill called?
Death with Dignity.
Death with Dignity. Controversial issue around the country. Very quickly, where's the status of that bill? Some of us old people want to know more about it.
Okay, well, I'm in your crowd. The bill has had a hearing. It was introduced. It had a hearing, and the next step is it for it to go to markup in the Committee of Health. And as you know, the chairs of committees really control when a matter gets brought before the committee.
Very quickly, what are the provisions, though, because we're almost out of time?
If you're terminally ill and you have an illness where you're to die, you're going to die within 6 months, you can, under very strict and limited circumstances and controls.
Self-administer.
You have to self-administer. You can get a prescription from a doctor that would allow you to choose the time and place of your death. And by the way, your death is imminent. You're on the doorstep of death, and you want to choose this path.
Finally, you've been one of Mayor Bowser's more persistent critics on the council, from developer deals to the Pepco-Exelon merger. These days, of course, you're not the only one, but you sat next to her on the dais for more than 4 years. You ran or you represented wards that were contiguous to one another, wards 3 and 4 respectively, but this honeymoon seems to be all over. How do you think the mayor is doing?
I think the mayor is doing well, but in fact, we had a conversation just a couple of days ago, and she knows that I personally like her very much, and I believe it's reciprocated. There are just some things that I have to speak out against if I think they're wrong, and this should not obscure the vast number of things about which we agree. Because they're more high profile, of course, and because I'm speaking out against them, they get more attention. But, the fact of the matter is I did sit next to her for those years, and I enjoyed it the entire time. We get along. I support most of her program. I'm very pleased with many things that she's doing, particularly the homeless issue. And so let's not paint this as, me, the council member from Ward 3, versus the mayor. It's not that at all. There are just some issues where we disagree.
Mary Chase, she is the D.C. council member who represents Ward 3. She is a Democrat. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Tom Sherwood is our resident analyst. He's an NBC4 reporter and a columnist with the current newspapers. He's not going anyplace for the time being, so I'm not going to say goodbye to you just yet.
Just watch for the slush fund pack and the $1 maximum contribution.
Thank you all for listening. I'm Kojo Namdi.
Thanks for listening to The Kojo Namdi Show. And if you're already a member of WAMU 88.5, thank you for your support. If not, it's easy to give online at wamu.org. Just click the donate button, and thanks.